I'm Michael Schroeder with Microsoft, and I'm here with Don Levy and Chris Gorman from Cinefilm, and they're here to talk about some of the new technology they have for video. Chris, can you tell us that?
Sure. So our software is a GPU accelerated product. The primary purpose of it is remove grain and remove digital noise. And also, we do a lot of frame rate conversion stuff too.
So why would I understand removing grain and noise? Where does this really fit in the big picture? Is this type of technology already being used by?
These are completely new algorithms that we've developed from the ground up. For example, in the post production industry. They get footage that comes from multiple different sources, so they'll get film that's shot on 16mm or 35mm, and then also like shot digitally, and they need to put all that together on the same timeline. Each source has a different type of noise profile, so 16mm is going to be more noisy because it gets blown up bigger, and likewise digital shot footage is shot in like low light situations or with lower end cameras. That noise profile is going to look much different than film grain. So what our product does is it allows you to remove the grain down to a baseline level, so that the timeline is now unified. It has basically a grain-free and noise-free timeline of footage. One of the key things that when you're removing film grain and noise is that you don't want to damage the detail in the image. And so we have a very rich stack of spatial and temporal filters that do an excellent job in removing the film grain or the noise in the grain.
So you mentioned this ran on the GPU.
Yeah.
What does that really mean for you? Does it make it faster? Is it what?
Yeah. So definitely. Fundamentally, our package, our system, has a plug-in architecture, and we call that our Pixel Strings engine. And that's a C++ system, and it uses the Microsoft Visual Studio environment to compile and debug and development on. Then we develop these plug-in filters that go in there, and our plugins we can write filters for the CPU, and we can also write the filters for the GPU. And our plugin architecture manages the information as it goes back and forth between the CPU and the GPU, and also the metadata and all the information that filters need. And in particular, our filters need to be able to request a neighborhood of frames, anywhere from typically a couple frames, like a frame before and after, all the way up to several, up to 60 frames in the case of pull down removal. It helps to have a big window.
What's pull down removal?
If you're trying to take 24p footage, so 24 frames per second footage, and you're trying to store it in a 60i container, pull down is essentially the process of repeating the frames. You repeat a frame twice, and you repeat it three times, 2, 3, 2, 3, 2, 3, and so. It looks okay on playback, but it's you before you do anything with that, like you're going to do editing or whatever. You really want to basically do the inverse of the pull down process to recover the original progressive frames.
So that's
if you get the pattern right, it's a non destructive process. You can recover the original progressive frames. I forgot where.
So this process, what's how long does this take?
Okay, our degrain denoise algorithms are the most computationally intensive algorithms, and the reason they're computationally intense is that the temporal we have some temporal filters, meaning that they use the neighborhood information, so a video frame before and after, they compute motion vectors for every pixel. We can go down to 1/8 pixel accurate motion vectors. We also compute confidence metrics per motion vector, and this is basically we use this to as a statistical measurement to basically know when to intelligently fall back to maybe a different part of our algorithm. So, but computing motion vectors on like 2K and 4K images, you know, just 4,000 pixels wide by whatever aspect ratio you want, tall, is a tremendous amount of data. Uncompressed DPX files, 4K, are typically around 50 megabytes per frame. Okay, so I'm talking 24 frames per second. It's a lot of data coming in. Motion estimation, depending upon the type of algorithm you're doing, may involve searching neighborhoods for pattern matching. So it's a tremendous amount of computational resources to generate really good motion vectors. The second thing is that there's a difference between motion vectors generated for compression's sake versus motion vectors generated for image processing algorithms. For example, interpolating brand new frames, synthesizing new frames between original frames, you have to have really high quality motion vectors that represent the true motion of the scene. Motion vectors generated for compression, on the other hand, they can be incorrect as long as the end result is a good compression result. Because there's a stage in the compression process where you can fix it up, essentially. Creating new frames on the fly, you have to have high quality motion vectors because what you're doing is you're morphing the image. You're basically moving colors around.
Okay.
So if a hand's moving across the scene, you want to track those pixels, those color values. You want to also do it at a sub-pixel accurate way because you want to maintain anti-aliasing edges and stuff like that. So you want to do it very smoothly. And if you have to have very good motion vectors in order to be able to interpolate a frame in between. So our format conversion product, which is called SpaceTime, and uses these motion vectors that we compute to be able to convert from any frame rate to any frame rate. So, and it does it on the fly. There's no rendering times because it generates these motion vectors real time, essentially, up to about 2K footage. You can generate real time motion vectors.
So what kind of hardware does this typically run on?
It runs on a very typical Intel platform, Windows platform, and
with the GPU.
With the GPU, that's
got
the key.
Yeah, okay.
And we're currently using the NVIDIA CUDA API to access the GPU card, the GPU's capabilities.
So did you start developing these algorithms that were CPU based and then moved to GPU?
Well, actually, so my background is in 3D graphics before I got into the video side of things, and also our lead engineer is a huge fan of gaming industry. He's wrote his own game engine several times just for fun, my colleague, who's the CEO of the company, approached me about 6 or 7 years ago and said, "Hey, I got an idea. I want to make digitally shot footage look more like film." Back then, predominantly the high-end cameras were still 60i. The concept of being able to get progressive frames out of a camera was starting to happen in the prosumer area and high-end area too. But for independent filmmakers, clearly interlaced cameras was sort of like the most accessible, and you can get very good like optics for them too. So we sought to develop a product that converted 60i, so 60 fields or interlaced video, into 24 frames per second progressive, but do it in a very very clean manner, trying to preserve as much of the original information as possible, and that meant generating the motion vectors for both the deinterlacing process and for the frame rate conversion. So to do high quality deinterlacing, we do motion estimation on both the individual fields separately, and we move them forward and backwards in time to line up the fields to the right point in time. We then reinterlace those motion compensated fields. And then we do some final filtering to make sure that there's no feathered edges remaining or anything like that. And the end result is a very high resolution image from that process. And then from there we can do motion estimation to take it from that progressive frame rate, which is 60 frames per second when we do it that way, down to 24 frames per second or whatever you want, 30 frames per second, 50 frames per second. So converting from NTSC to PAL is our product does it. in a superior way than other products that don't do all these motion estimation. There are probably products out there that do this too, but we're able to do it for standard def footage. We're able to do it more than 2 or 3 times playback rate, so it can crank through libraries like that. And then for high def footage, it's real time. And then for 2K, 4K video, if you need to convert like footage that was shot 25p, and you want to convert that to 24p, mm-hmm. you could use our tool to do that as well.
So this is used in film and television, and now for the web, with the constraints on the web of compression and getting bits down to people's computers or their TVs or their whatever screen they're at. What's the relevance for this for the web?
I think the degraining denoise step is actually very, very relevant. We found that footage that has a lot of natural film grain in it, or digital noise, when it is compressed, if you were to do a denoise or degrain process to it before you compress it, you essentially end up with a 40 to 50% savings for the same image quality. So the file can be literally half the size of the file. Let me rewind that. Okay, so. The degrain denoise.
Yeah.
The degrain and denoise process can be applied. This is stuff to hard to do.
I'm getting it. So basically, when you do the degrain denoise, you're able to get the same quality for less bits.
That's correct. Yes.
And when you're trying to put 1080 or HD quality over the web, That's really nice.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially at even more aggressive compression settings, it's more important to get the noise out and get down to a clean image without destroying the detail, of course.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Because then the compression algorithm is working more on preserving the details versus trying to compress this random noise, random information. And the thing about this type of noise is that it's not consistent from frame to frame. And so, with H.264 and these other temporal compression algorithms, the noisier the image it is, the more, it can either mess up their motion estimation, also it requires more fix-up in the back end, which requires more bits to fix up the predictive process and the compression steps.
So if you were to automate the workflow of this happening, this would be during the post-production process before it turns into the H.264, VC1, or any other web video format if you're going for a web video, right?
Exactly, yeah.
If I can add in, what's interesting about the application is that it can actually take the file, the image, the information, actually reduce the file size by 40-50%, and push the same. That has implications in other areas. That has implications in archival. In fact, we were talking with an archival vendor earlier today. They'd like to be able to take the noise reduction and embed that in as part of the process, so they can do the noise reduction, and that becoming a very powerful secondary application for what we're doing. Even more interesting is not only can you do pre-processing before the post-process in order to get rid of the noise, the digital noise, the grain, whatever, then go through the post-process. In a lot of cases, because you're reducing the file size, you can actually do the post-production you need to do, and then on the other end, you can do a post-processing where you can add grain back in. And since we have a grain management tool, you can actually add in 16mm, 35mm, 70mm film, whatever you want. You change the size, you move it around, and so on. So you have the ability to manage it either at the beginning of the process or the end of the process, and then get the saving of bandwidth and the saving of storage and so on.
Well, this is really exciting.
Yeah, so our grain simulation tool simulates a very low level the grain structure, so it's a true like anti-aliased grain image. It's not like pixels on or off. It's very soft and accurate grain modeling process. In fact, we model the layers of the emulsion, and it requires the GPU in this case as well. So it's a very expensive process to do synthesized grain correctly on the fly, and it's truly random. Every frame is different, just like you would in nature. You don't see repeating patterns or anything like that. And then we have these dials that allow you to like basically set the size. So if you wanted to shoot 16mm film, you can remove the grain, 16mm grain, which blown up on a big screen can look too large sometimes. And then later you can do all of your editing, add CG, and then at the end, if you're going to send it out to digital cinema, you can add a synthetic film grain back in to make it look like 35mm film or grain. Or if you're going to actually send it back out to film for distribution, then that's actually going to pick up 35mm grain in that process. So maybe you don't want to add it back in that case.
That sounds very cool. I can't wait to take a look at this. Thank you guys for joining me here, and thank you very much.